Hello, a very good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Cambridge Services. We're doing a very special Pinken podcast to discuss the latest Norwich City action because we are live on Facebook at the same time. My name is Michael Bailey. I am, of course, with Chief Norwich City writer Paddy Davitt. Hello, Pads.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks. A bit tired, but we're moseying on. And our Norwich City correspondent colleague, David Freezer. Dave, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. It's halfway home, so that's always good.
Beyond, I think. We're
Cambridge Services, obviously.
We've pushed on. We're going to be here for the next 20-25 minutes or so. For those of you who don't want to watch a live sinkhole, that's fine.
I'd rather be watching a sinkhole, mate, truth be told.
We're going to
miss the drama.
Missing all the drama. We'll, of course, discuss all the action from last night. Norwich City drawing 1-1 with Barnsley. If there's anything else you want to ask us to, then post your comments. I'll try and read them from here, although I've realised the writing is quite small. Dave, you get your phone out.
See if I can do that.
Yeah. Dave will follow them too.
I'll mute it.
Yes, indeed. Loads of reaction, of course, at Pinken.com, including my video verdict from first thing last night. So you've already seen me waffle on with my face. Pad, let's have a listen to you waffle on with your face, shall we? What did you make of last night?
Eventful, yeah. On and off the pitch. Wrote about it today, actually, and I think it's pretty pertinent. We've seen both sides of this debate now. There's those who are not really buying into it. All I see is, you know, struggling to score goals, the odd game where they're unable to bang a few in to keep them out the other end, and they don't really feel the progress. Conversely, there are those still who can see the signs, can see the development of young players, all against the backdrop of financial issues, and described it as a tug of war today, and I think that's pretty apt. That's what it feels like. You know, you've got the half full, half empty type Norwich fans, and I'm afraid there's a bit more of this to come, I think, before it starts to shape into what we all hope is a progressive promotion challenging squad next season. But yeah, if you look at it, Barnsley in isolation, then I'm afraid, you know, it's not good enough, is it? You know, a team who's struggling, not won at Oakwell for 4 months, as Dave pointed out in the build-up, and they weren't that far away from ending that run. So, you know, in isolation, it's not good enough. It's not where Norwich want to be, fans, players, management. But that's where we are at the minute. And, you know, as I say, it depends what side of the scale you're now falling. If you're buying into it, then you can see the positives from last night. All the injuries, all the illnesses. Another one for Alex Tete. And yet they still managed to come back in adversity. If you're not feeling it, then it's, when is the corner going to get turned? That's how I sense the mood is at the minute.
Yeah, and it's kind of solidifying on both sides of that mood is what I'm sensing from doing the live coverage.
Well, Dave? Yeah, there's a comment which flows into that nicely here straight away. Dave Clark says, the game was shocking and it's not the first. The play was awful, worse than Sunday League, to be honest, which maybe a little bit over the top, but, you know, a few flashes along those lines, I suppose.
Well, I mean, Norwich were booed off at half-time, effectively. There weren't many fans, but, you know, I heard them boo.
Yeah, I suppose that was the proximity of the goal to half-time, wasn't it? And on reflection, I mean, during that first half, of course, it was far more controlled than it was at Hull on Saturday. Bringing the three at the back had worked to an extent that they were firmly in the game, and if they hadn't have just switched off, you know, a minute before half time, then they would have gone in 0-0. And if you then send Onel Hernandez on 10 minutes into the second half, show some more attacking flair and nick a 1-0, this conversation is a very different tone, isn't it?
Was there mitigation in the personnel? Because so many players were out or not at 100%. Christoph Zimmermann played, and basically at the hour mark was kind of like, I'm done now, boss, I need to go and lie down. Which also brought the tactical change that kind of Norwich improved afterwards. But also, James Husband hasn't played in a long time. Mario Vrančić hasn't played. Even Marley Watkins is, you know, although we've seen him play and not necessarily liked everything we've seen from him, he hasn't played a lot. Yeah. And you could kind of tell that in a lot of ways. And I thought Daniel put it quite well in terms of how Norwich were maybe lacking in confidence to go and attack the game, and therefore kind of found that they wanted to just sit and be defensive and tight.
Well, I mean, since Hull, all he's spoken about is their poor defensive behaviour. So if that message has percolated into the lads who went out on the pitch yesterday, of course they're going to, we've got to keep it tight, we've got to be nice and solid. And to be honest, even when they're not in that mindset, they're struggling in the final third. So if it was exacerbated last night, again, at the risk of repeating myself, it's the credit issue, the fans who are willing to give it. a little bit of credit. We'll accept that as mitigation. But obviously that poster Dave read out, you know, that's the prevailing view, isn't it? That they would say we've probably heard that too often, too many times. You know, players in and out, injury, illness, and it's the same type of incremental gains / treading water. So yes, if you're asking me, was there mitigation? Of course there was. You know, Harrison Reed was only on the bench to make up the numbers. He wasn't available to come on. That was what Daniel Farke said to me after the game. Zimmerman, clearly they've had to push him out there. Alex Tete has had to be pushed out there because on Monday it was very much the knees are playing him up and he's also on the cusp of a suspension. We can't afford to risk him. Team sheet drops at 6:45. Alex Tete's in the team. Christoph Zimmerman's in the team. They really, really are down to the bare bones. So in that climate, it doesn't matter where you go in the championship, to go away from home and come back with a result, I think has to be seen as a positive. But, you know, as I say, it depends who you speak to, doesn't it? Whether that's a good or a bad result. Of course it's a bad result in the context of you have pretensions to get the top end of the table next season and beyond, then yes, of course, that's not good enough. But in the here and now, I think it was a good result.
Josh Murphy in the second half, and I don't know if this was because Anel Hernandez came on and him and Josh got to play a little bit wider maybe, but it was like, as I said, a switch went off in the second half. One cross and all of a sudden he flashed another shot just wide of the far post and took his goal really well, helped by James Husband, his first assist of the season, I think, apparently. So a little flash there from Josh, which we just have not seen so often this season.
Yeah, it was Husband's first game of 2018, wasn't it? He hadn't played since that 0-0 at Burton when him and Watkins were both terrible on the left, frankly. But yeah, Josh, like you say, the light bulb flicked on. And to be honest, it's been a little while since we've seen him play that well over a consistent period of time. Looking at it in the context of one game, he and I wonder what the motivation for that was. Whether that was that he is a bit sick of being used as a striker, whether he doesn't feel that that's getting the best out of him, because I can't think of for a little while since we've seen Josh properly on the left, properly attacking his fullback, properly getting crosses in. I mean, his goal, to be fair to him, he took that really well. Good touch to set it up, and the keeper just wasn't expecting it, and he really gave it some power to get it over his head before he even knew about it. And I think you could probably sum all that up in his celebration, in that initially it almost looked like he was thinking about doing something similar to sort of cupping his ears or something like he has done in the past, and then he sort of pulled back and thought, no, I won't go there. Let's not sort of make that moment about me. So maybe that was a touch of maturity shining through. But that's 9 goals for the season, 5 of them in the league. So he's moving towards a tally for the season, which is going to reflect well on him. But the reality is that we haven't seen enough of that sort of 35, 40 minutes of Josh Murphy going at it as a wide player and being productive. So hopefully more of that to come.
Should he have won it, Pat, with that last chance at the end? Yeah, Dave's saying yes.
Ed Balls certainly thought he should have won it, given that they were sat 2 rows in front of us. He was definitely up and celebrating. Of course, that was a more difficult chance than the one he scored with. And that's the frustration, you know, at the risk of repeating what we've been saying about Josh for too long now. Potential, but not the potent intent that you see from guy at the other end of the pitch. Similar age, Ollie McBurney, 6-7, I think that was last night. Championship player of the month, just got his first call up to the Scotland squad. Similar age player, similar development path. One looks like he's crossed over into producing now on a regular basis, a la James Maddison, a la pertinent to Josh's brother last season. Josh isn't there yet. And again, we're talking about mitigation a lot here, but I think it's clear to me that he does prefer to play wider left, and he's not really buying into this play down the centre, because it's a totally different game. You know, you're squaring up your winger, you're facing goal centrally. More often than not, you've got to come short, you've got your back to defenders. He won't have played that type of role that Farke's asking him too often. Yes, okay, maybe the odd academy game he was found himself down the centre, but that's not really what I think is Josh Murphy's optimum position on the field. And you know, who are we to argue with the head coach? But on the evidence of last night, playing wider left,
I mean, it's weird to see the fact that the two goals I think Josh has scored from running down the middle, say at Villa and at Arsenal, both came with him actually playing wider and then having the freedom to come centrally as opposed to actually playing centrally as his kind of role. So Dave, you're flashing some comments.
We've got quite a few coming through here. Dave Clark follows up his first one and says, talk of promotion next season is laughable, to be honest, as we will probably lose Madders and Defo Gunn, which I think is probably a fair assumption at this point. Seb Billing, I'm looking forward to next season now, and this sums up your opening point, Pad. You know, there's almost a division there at the moment, isn't it? It's glass half full, glass half empty. Seb says, I'm looking forward to next season now. We can't go anywhere, so people need to stop moaning and enjoy the last several games. The last two matches, I do get more enjoyment from my under-9s team. So, Seb, you're going to have to let us know who your under-9s team is.
Yeah, we're all coming. We're all coming to the next game. We'll do a full service.
Give us a shout-out. So, you'll have hundreds of people at Cossie under-9s or whatever it is. Tom Datt, do you not think that if we continue defensively with the back three and work forward through the summer, that we could be in a much better position next year? Mr. Bailey?
Probably yes. There is that potential, but you're looking at the transition of such key players in terms of if James Maddison is sold and whoever, Nelson Oliveira might not be here after the summer. You're having to do a lot of work from
Nelson
scratch.
Nelson Oliveira be a loss, Michael?
I think as long as they bring in something that is useful as well.
Is Nelson Oliveira useful this season, Michael?
We've still got to see
Dennis
Shrabeni as well. We haven't seen anything of him. And Marley Watkins is the only other striker option. So you can't get rid of Nelson Oliveira unless you're going to bring something in that is going to be useful, I guess.
He's been a waste of space this season, let's be brutally honest. You know, not all of his doing because he's had a few injury and illness issues. But, get rid. Norwich with him as his spearhead, it's not going to happen. You know, there'll be clusters of positive results start of the season where he scores a clump of goals, but look at his career path, every club he's been at, can you hang your hat on him? No. So for me, you get rid, and you will still probably get a decent fee, not the fee that you would have got for him last summer if you'd cashed in, but I'm sure they would. I guarantee top of Stuart Webber's scouting reports at the minute is find us some goals, find us some strikers, because the previous point Dave read out, I agree with. I think there is a defensive platform, and okay, take Angus Gunn out of that because it's unlikely he'll be back next season. Put Remy Matthews in, why not? Hanley and Zimmerman are certainly going to be there. Closer maybe not, but I don't think you wouldn't be that hard to find a closer replacement. So you've got your basis of a three, Pinto on the right, Jamal Lewis on the left, there's your platform, and then it's just further forward. And that defensive unit, is it 15 clean sheets now in the last 30 odd games? As good as anything in the division. So there are foundations, but I'm afraid until the top end of the pitch matches the back end of the pitch, then we're going to be talking about mid-table and mediocrity, I'm afraid.
The M word.
I'd want Oliveira up front more than Watkins based on last night, though. I mean, I did a player watch on him, which is at pinkin.com, which you can have a read of now. And again, very underwhelming performance from him, particularly first half. He was very poor, particularly in the air. He doesn't offer you any kind of presence. He wasn't able to win balls in the air up against the centre-backs. But then it comes down to kind of the discussion, which has been most of the season, I suppose, is that once they changed formation and it was, you know, more bodies forward, once you had Hernandez and Murphy wide and it was sort of a 4-1-4-1, he looked far less isolated, just with other runners around him to give him that little bit of space, and he was more involved. But the actual quality of his touch and actual threat in front of goal was almost negligible. So I didn't really see the point of throwing on Dennis Shrabeni in what, second minute of injury time. I mean, what's he going to do with that? If you're going to go the rest of the season without Nelson, and you're going to give Marley a run of games to try and find some form, you've got to at least be giving Shrabeni 20 minutes to do something. Otherwise, how can you judge him on what he's capable of?
We should touch on Alex Tetti's injury as well, because that sounded like quite a nasty one. Blood flowing from his foot. He punctured a vein, or James' husband punctured his vein, which is nice of him.
Hope he said sorry.
I was quite surprised by how Daniel Farke did say it was quite serious. He almost wondered at one time whether it would be a career-threatening kind of injury, which, you know, is probably not the sort of thing you want to say about a player who's out of contract in the summer, because he is going to have to, you know, he's going to want to stay fit to at least prove that whether it's at Norwich or elsewhere, he's still got years in him.
I think it was the blood. I think it was the flowing of the blood that it probably triggered quite a lot of shock and concern in the immediate aftermath. But I think within when Farke came to speak to me after the game, within that period of time, it was quite clear it wasn't as bad as was initially feared. We will wait over the coming days, but I still think it could be touch and go whether we see him back, because if he's got a hole in his foot, I think that's going to take a few weeks to heal. So we might have seen the last of Alex Tettey in a Norwich shirt, which would be a shame to go out that way, but I think it's pretty clear that the finances, that both parties are some way apart, you know. So don't see it that Alex Tettey's in a Norwich shirt next season. And it won't be the only one in this current group either.
No. While we're live here on Facebook, get in your comments. We'll be on for another 5 minutes or so, although time's got away from me. Norwich, of course, heading back to Carrow Road on Saturday, where they'll play Reading. Hopefully we'll see a goal. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? It's been a bit barren at Carrow Road recently. Any more on there, Dave?
Yeah, plenty. We're 15 minutes in.
Oh, thank you. That's fine. Yeah, 20 minutes.
Stephen Tilney, Mr. Farke was supposed to be the man to fix our defence. I mean, I suppose he's done that to an extent, but there's been a few wobbles along the way.
And they've got a difficult situation where the more free they are higher up the pitch, the less secure they look at the back. I think we saw it against Forest, didn't they? They looked pretty open when they went back to a back four and opened more bodies going forwards.
Yeah, no, he has. Yeah, I think he touched on that last night, that needs must last night at 1-0 down. He had to basically, well, that allied to Zimmerman running his race. He had to get him off, got an Andes on. And they didn't get caught out last night, albeit they, you know, it was a little bit more fraught, wasn't it? It was a bit more Zimmerman and closer you're on your own, lads. So that is the balance, and you know, everything between now and the end of the season, moving into next summer, that's the next stage of the development cycle. If they can't solve that, then it's going to be flatlining again into next season. And you know, if we're still sat here this time next season and they're 13th, 14th, nowhere near it, then I think the clarion call for change will grow.
And Barry Taylor's comment flows into that nice. He says, spot on, ability in the final third is killing us. All very well having a solid back three or four and a creative midfield, but if we can't get the ball in the net, then the effort is wasted. So, I mean, you know, spot on there. That is football at the end of the day. You've got to score goals, haven't you? Daryl Allen, this one's a little bit of a lengthy one, so deep breath. I was at the game last night and can't understand the negativity. With the limited resources Daniel Farke had available, you have to applaud him and the players for the way they managed the contest last night. We were the better team second half and got a deserved point, and we should have won it at the end. Not good enough drawing at Barnsley, I know, but if you take last night in isolation, it was a good night's work. We are a bang average mid-table championship team, and people need to realise that we have no divine right to be winning. It's tailed off there. I think he may have run out of space.
That to me is the crucial point, because we talk about the team in transition and the club in transition, the fans are in transition too, aren't they? Because this is not what's happened in the last 7 years. I'll come to you on this, Dave. You know, Norwich have been challenging, and that expectation is still there, and I guess some fans have kind of shed that expectation to a degree as to where the club should be. In historical context, that's probably not far off where Norwich have been, as opposed to, say, in, you know, riding high in the Premier League for most of their time in the divisions. But it's not that straightforward, is it?
Yeah, exactly. It might be a generational thing as well. I mean, you've got a generation of people who have grown up through their teenage years who have seen Norwich on the up. You know, League One title, Championship promotion, 3 years out of four in the Premier League, promotion via the playoffs at Wembley. There's a generation of Norwich fans who've come through, and that is the level that they're expecting them, with big money being spent on players. And we're now, the wheel is turning to a completely different cycle. But for guys of our age who can remember very well the dross of the 90s for Norwich and the mid-table mediocrity of those years, you know, which followed financial difficulties, obviously, it's not a surprise. You know, we've been here before. It took Norwich a good while to sort something which got them moving in an upward direction again. And at the end of the day, it comes down to players arriving and creating a spark. And of course, for Norwich, that was Darren Huckabee. He was a player that they really pushed the boat out to bring in, and he just sparked the place. Grant Holt was the next player to do it. And at the moment, Steve Downs wrote a really good piece in the latest Pinkin magazine, didn't he, about where are the next heroes. And we keep going to these games, we go to Hull, we go to Barnsley. When is someone going to arrive? When is a Dennis Rebeni going to bang one in from 25 yards and arrive? When is Marley Watkins going to arrive? It's been all season, it's not paid off. So it all comes down to the players on the pitch and really taking ownership of it, doesn't it? So it would be nice to see somebody take the ball bull by the horns and give people something to be excited about going into the summer, because that isn't happening yet.
I mean, in fairness, I don't know if there's anything more James Maddison could have done this year to literally carry Norwich on his own. But I mean, it's difficult because no one can tell Norwich fans what to expect. Like, they will see all the money that's gone, and they will still hope that next season. I mean, the board will say it. They've said it with the Canaries bond. The aim is still to go to get promotion to the Premier League. Whereas I find myself sitting here going, I can't see that happening in the next year or two. I know they'll aim for it, but to achieve it will be so difficult.
No, but that's the essence of it being a football supporter, isn't it? Whatever club, you know, that you hope you can have a, I mean, League One type season, even better, the Championship season. They weren't fancy to come straight back into League One and go straight through again, but Lambert and that group of sort of players, they had something special and they built on it and the fans bought into it, and it was an exhilarating ride, and that surely is the eternal hope that sort of you supporters are trying to tap into, that around the corner, okay, they understand the financial situation is impinging, they understand they're living with this, the errors that have been made financially in previous windows, but that still isn't going to stop them hoping that next season, back end of this season, they can start to feel that, yep, things are coming together now, and there are better times ahead. Otherwise, why do you support a football team?
Spot on. I can't argue that at all. What have we got? Should we take a couple more messages, Dave?
Yeah, Seb Billing follows up, lets us know who his youth team is. Rocklands. I think he said it was under-9s before, didn't he? We've only lost one league game this season and now in the semi-final cup match. So
good luck. Good luck with the semis.
Good work, great those stuff. Lads. Hamish Jolly. Can you not see other clubs being interested in buying Zimmerman or Hanley in the summer? Bournemouth supposedly had a little look at Crystal Zimmerman in January, didn't they? Although whether that got anywhere close to an inquiry or a bid, I'd never heard any suggestion of that. But, you know, his rate of improvement has been impressive. So you would have thought that maybe one of the promoted clubs might have a little look.
Grant Hanley's got the pedigree, recalled for the Scotland squad as well.
Oh, yeah, 100%. That wouldn't at all surprise me if those players are in demand. But you can't sell everybody, can you? So, you know, ultimately, if you are sending off the vibes that, yeah, okay, everything we're doing is still with a view to being a competitive squad who can aim for the Premier League, however realistic or not that is, next season, then again it comes down to some very astute planning in terms of Stuart Webber, Daniel Farker, who goes and who stays. I mean, ultimately, it's a cliche, but ultimately every window, the aim surely is to have a better squad than when you started the window. That means there's a lot of moving parts, and if a Maddison goes, then they'll have enough money to reinvest on the football side. Clearly there'll be a chunk of that money that will have to go to other areas of the business, but then it's the onus is on can they improve the squad, and ultimately how do you judge can they improve the squad? You judge it by what you see every weekend, every Tuesday night, and the league table at the end of the season, and at the minute it's not favourable, is it? Let's be honest, you know, but there's still another 10 games left to go. Let's see where we are when the guns fall silent.
Indeed, Dave.
A couple of others talking about Marley Watkins. Josh Reynolds, I'm afraid this one doesn't pull any punches. Marley Watkins is one of the worst players I've seen in green and yellow. Abysmal, not impressed at all. And James Kent, what did you make of the call to start Watkins instead of Srebini? Will we look to get rid of Watkins in the summer, though? Part of me feels sad we didn't sign Ollie Watkins instead. Now, he would have
hugely. He's been very productive this year, Ollie Watkins. I mean, the problem with Marley Watkins is we all saw what he did for Barnsley last year in terms of, you know, in a slightly different role, but he you know, we saw some of the product of that, and I guess he's getting played hoping that he will spark, that he will show some pace, he will get in behind and he'll create some chances or take some shots on goal, or just don't see any of it. I say, apart from, say, the second half at home to Sheffield Wednesday when he came on and Norwich improved their game all round and he was kind of involved in that, yet you wouldn't say he directly influenced the particular goals off the top of my head. That's been really it all season.
Two things. I mean, he's a man with no confidence, clearly you can see that. And the second thing is, we know that because we've actually spoken to him in the last 2 weeks, and it's quite clear that he really feels this has been a low season for him in his career. Partly down to his own issues in terms of he was suspended, he's had a few injury problems, but he also, you got the sense, he's struggling to get to grips with Farker's demands for him, the rotational system that Farker is clearly doing, probably out of necessity, because nothing's really clicked up the top end of the pitch. So he's in for a game. I think he said 3 games was the most he'd had in terms of a consistent run in the side. So again, there's a lot of factors there, but ultimately he looks like a man bereft of confidence, and he's a shadow of the guy who, as he said in his own words, scored 10 goals and produced 9 assists in the Championship last season for Barnsley. So there is a player there. No matter what we're seeing at the minute, there is a player there. It's not coming from him, and it's not coming from the head coach. So if that remains the same, then he will continue to be a peripheral figure.
I think some Norwich fans hope that his return to Oakwell, which is where he scored his last league goal, wasn't it? I think you checked when he was still last April, would mean that he would score for Norwich in the league, but sadly not. Would you start him? Who do you start with on Saturday against Reading, Dave?
Well, the Barnsley fans enjoyed seeing him struggle last night, didn't they? There were a few occasions that, like, he tried to cross, it was blocked, then he tried to pass to the edge of the box, no one there. Barnsley fans absolutely loved it. They could see that his confidence was rock bottom. And one of the moments I highlighted in the player watch was he went to win a header against Zeki Fryers, their left back. Completely misjudged it, missed the player, just fell over on his backside, stood up, hands on hips, like, this isn't going well for me. And you could just see at that point his confidence was rock bottom. As we've already said, he did improve in the second half, to be fair to the guy. I would say at the moment, with Oliveira out, presumably he'll be okay after the international break. As Daniel said, it was 2 weeks with his calf issue. I would probably start Marley again against Reading on Saturday at home, but I would want to see Dennis Shrabani getting more of a chance. There's no point putting the guy on for so late. But then equally, the difficult decision Daniel has got to make is that they were much more of a threat second half last night once they had more bodies forward, but they had much more control of the game by starting with three at the back. So he's got to somehow find the mixture of those two things which work at home, where, as we all know, the form hasn't been good enough. Reading are a similar-ish team to Norwich in that they like to control possession. So it's not easy for Daniel, is it? There's a lot of difficult things for him to keep bubbling along to get to the summer. And if we can manage to do it where they pick up some wins and you still head into the summer with a bit of positivity, it'd have done well. Barry Newman asked, is it time to introduce Marcus Edwards on Saturday? Again, from what Daniel said, I don't think we're going to see him, if at all, until after the international break, are we?
He seems miles off it in terms of whatever's going on at Colney at the moment. And in terms of Reading, Pad, I mean, they've had to adjust their expectations greatly, given, well, they got smashed, of course, at Carrow last year, but got all the way to the playoffs. They've stuck with the App Stam, so they obviously see that as a long-term thing.
Well, doesn't that underline the point that they were literally one goal from being in the Premier League? You know, Huddersfield edged them on a game that was just basically wasn't a game. It was just the worst game of football you've ever seen, because there was so much at stake. But that's how close the App Stam got that group of players. And since then, air's gone out of it, the wheels have come off, and they look bang average. So maybe that, in terms of Norwich's perspective, and we're talking about this is so far from being right, it just shows that it can change quickly. I mean, look at the galvanising impact Warnock's had at Cardiff. That's not been something that's been in the planning for 3 years. He's gone in there and grabbed it by the scruff of the neck and proven what is possible. Much was made of the Wagner comparisons in terms of the Huddersfield model and what Norwich are trying to do. Now, footballing wise, they're chalk and cheese, Wagner and Farker, but ultimately I think Wagner, in his first season at Huddersfield, they finished around 15th. They were flirting with relegation following summer, bang, and look what happened, and now in the Premier League. So it can change quicker than it feels at the minute. At the minute, it doesn't feel like it's going to change, but it can change quicker. But Norwich fans, I'm sure, between now and Sheffield Wednesday, the final game of the season, they just want to see evidence of the change. But, you know, at the minute, it's almost like press play, repeat, press play, repeat. And it's very hard to buy into that, I would imagine, if you're a Norwich fan at the minute, because you're not seeing enough to convince you that just around the corner is a great leap forward.
And I'm sure plenty of people are still mulling over whether to actually renew their season tickets or not still as well. Dave, we've got final message.
Yeah, we're just closing in on 30 minutes, so we'll wrap it up shortly. But AD Sedgwick says, let's just now give youngsters a chance. The season is a write-off. I see quite a lot of people were talking on Twitter afterwards, sort of saying if Harrison Reed is only fit enough to make up the numbers, then why not have a kid on the bench? But I don't know, I suppose if you really needed to, you would have chucked Harrison on more than someone with no experience. And realistically, the under-23s had a game the night before. The only player I really think in their squad who can operate as a defensive midfielder is Devontae Aaron-Sabir. But he's played in defence, fullback. He's similar in stature to Ben Godfrey, so I suppose he could do it. But as I say, they played on the south coast at Southampton on Monday night, so I guess the timings of that didn't work very well. And finally, Tom Wheatley, will Farker stick with the back three next season, do you think? I'd be pretty surprised if that's not the formation we largely see, certainly when they play Fulham at Carrow Road when we come back from the break, which looks like it's going to be a really difficult game because they're flying, aren't they?
So all I would say on that is yes, because when he first came in, all through pre-season, it was a back three. So clearly, his go-to defensive system is a back three, because that's what he wanted to play. The only reason he abandoned it is because basically, you know, I'm trying to think, why did he change from the three at the start of the season? Because it was obviously the four at Millwall, wasn't it? And then he went back to the three. But he did, for whatever reason, abandon the three at the very outset of the season. And went down the route of going with a four, and then clearly when it got to Villa, Millwall wasn't working, pieces got thrown up again.
He started a few games with the three and then they tended to improve when they changed to a four.
Played the three at Fulham on the opening day, I remember that.
Played right wing back, didn't he?
So I think it just became adjustment that the team was more happy with four.
But clearly, I mean, I think if he had a blank sheet of paper and he was writing down what way he'd want to go, he would want to go with a three. And I would suggest, yes, okay, it's not helping the forward part of the equation, but there's enough compelling evidence this season now in terms of the clean sheets, the strength that they seem to exude when they go with a three, that I think that's the way we'll go next season. And then it's just, can we sort it out at the top end of the pitch?
We're probably different personnel, but yeah. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that, of course. Gentlemen, thanks so much. Dave, Paddy, thanks all you guys for watching, listening and getting your questions and comments in. We much appreciate it. We will, of course, be bringing you full build-up, live coverage and reaction of Norwich City's visit from Reading on Saturday ahead of the international break. So let's give it one more push before we get 2 weeks off and we can ignore all the international football. So yeah, Pinken.com for all that. Until then, have a very nice day. I'll see you soon.